In 2 weeks' time, the federal government will hand down the 2022 budget. It will be Josh Frydenberg's third budget and this government's ninth. The annual speech that accompanies the numbers is an incredibly important part of a government's narrative. The numbers don't speak for themselves. There's always a story that moulds the numbers to create the political narrative. For Liberal Party governments, the Treasurer's story is absolutely essential to constructing the notion that they are upholding their commitments to the Australian people because they are good economic managers. And no matter what the numbers actually say, the government script every budget night will repeat this claim. This is the government's true long-term investment, the story that only they can be trusted with the economy. That story has had incredible political power with real political outcomes that have hurt millions of Australians. Let's revisit for a moment the first LNP budget of this government by then Treasurer Joe Hockey. In his storytelling, he created two enemies, government spending and those people he called the leaners. To counter these enemies, this government's first budget cut funding to our health system, cut funding to education, including 20% cut to higher education, cut the social safety net for the unemployed, the sick, students, pensioners, and low-income families. They sacked 16,500 federal public sector workers. And we must not forget who Joe Hockey was speaking about when he demonised the so-called leaners, the majority of everyday Australians, the public sector, essential and frontline workers, people on production lines, services and hospitality workers, all leaners. Low-income families, the unemployed, the sick, those with disabilities, pensioners, all leaners. The government's self-nominating good economic management has hurt all these people, as if hurting people and workers is good for the economy. The pandemic revealed that this rhetoric's not only empty and harmful, but extremely poor economic management. As Jim Stanford from the Australian Institute's own Centre for Future Work has so eloquently written, the pandemic showed the Australian public who really delivers value in the economy. And it's not the smart decisions of CEOs or politicians creating investor confidence. It's people, it's workers. As our nation was put into lockdown to cope with the public health emergency, who kept us going and who stayed at work to keep us safe? Government workers, essential frontline and retail staff. Workers kept our economy going and workers deliver real value. The pandemic also showed us economic management that works for the people and the nation. Not even this LNP government could resist the actual solutions to the economic crisis wrought by the pandemic and demanded by nearly everyone. Solutions like direct support for jobs, wages and leave entitlements through hard times to keep money flowing in the economy and keep people safe. And for the recovery, if we want a recovery for all and not just for some, it's very clear that government-led interventions and investments are essential. There's another inconvenient number at the heart of every budget this government has delivered that puts a hole in their claim to be trusted on economic management. From Joe Hockey to Josh Frydenberg, from Tony Abbott to Scott Morrison, every single budget has predicted that wage growth is just around the corner. And every year under this government, Australians have instead suffered record low wage growth. After 9 years of coalition rule, Australian wages are way too low and the problem is getting worse. The government and their decisions have baked low wage growth into Australia's economy. To use language made famous by Matthias Cormann, the finance minister at the time, to describe their design, low wages is a design feature of the labour market. Whether times are good or times are bad, whether unemployment is low or unemployment is high, wages have been growing too slowly. Wages are too low for Australian households to achieve a decent, stable standard of living. They are too low to support the consumer spending we need to continue recovering from the recession. And now they are way too low to keep up with accelerating inflation. They have suppressed wages in the public sector. Every year, they've failed to support improvements in the minimum wage. They've demonised workers and their unions trying to bargain for better wages. They've changed the laws so that casualising the workforce is easier for employers, and they've stripped away rights for workers. This is the context we must judge Josh Frydenberg's third budget on. In 2021, workers suffered the biggest pay cut in real terms that we've seen in over 20 years. As inflation has outstripped wages growth, a worker on the average income of $68,000 has effectively had an $832 pay cut. $832 pay cut. That's the average. But shockingly, it's actually worse for the workers who've been on the front line keeping the country going through the pandemic. Full-time workers in healthcare and social support have had their pay effectively cut by $967 last year. For those in transport, postal and warehousing, risking their health and safety to keep the nation running, they lost an eye-watering $1,497. Education and training workers lost $1,362. And admin and support services went backwards by $1,185. Peer beneath the inflation figures, and there's a similar story of extreme price rises hurting those who can least afford them. Petrol is grabbing the headlines, but family budgets are being hit from all sides. Childcare costs went up 6.5% last year, rising nearly three times faster than wages. And it's risen by even more than that in seven out of the past 10 years. Rents are even worse, surging 9% last year, with experts predicting they'll go even higher this year. The cost of groceries is also outpacing sluggish wage growth. We've had nearly a decade of record low wage growth and nearly a decade of this coalition government. That's no coincidence. This is an Australian problem, not a global problem. Until 2013, wages in Australia were growing faster than the average in other industrial countries. Since then, they've almost ground to a halt, growing less than one third as fast in real terms. As the OECD average. The government has cheered on cuts to penalty rates. They walked away from their own laws to tackle wage theft. They don't support increases to the minimum wage, and they are not supporting aged care workers in their current fight for better wages. They've heavily capped the pay of their own workforce, the Commonwealth Public Service. And they've made it easier for employers to casualise staff. Insecure work is at the heart of this problem. To understand why, let's take a deeper dive into what's going on in Australian workplaces. The official unemployment rate of 4.2% is good news on the face of it. However, unemployment has mostly declined because of the impact of stimulus spending during the pandemic, combined with lower labour supply resulting from our closed borders. Morrison originally opposed JobKeeper, but unions fought for and won it. That program, combined with the coronavirus supplement and other income supports, was vital in preventing a much worse recession. However, the government did not attach adequate conditions to those programs to stop rorts and eliminated them far too soon. And even this encouraging unemployment rate is a poor measure for telling us what's really going on in the world of work. Firstly, in January, we still had close to 1 million people who wanted more hours but couldn't get them. This is supposedly at the height of employers being desperate for more workers in some sectors. Secondly, there are nearly another million people marginally attached to the labour force. That means they're able to work but were discouraged from looking the day they answered the survey. Thirdly, during Omicron, record numbers of people were officially employed but were unable to work, either through illness, looking after others, or being forced to isolate. We estimate that 350,000 workers couldn't work at all, and a further 150,000 had to cut back on hours in January. 160 million hours of work were lost, a huge hit to workers' pay packets, all because of a let it rip attitude to the virus led by the federal government. Add all these together and nearly 3 million Australians either couldn't work or weren't getting enough hours. Another 2.4 million workers are casual with no right to get a shift tomorrow. Millions more are on labour hire, fixed term or sham contracting arrangements, minimum hours part-time contracts, are gig workers or suffering under other corporate strategies to cut their wages. Qantas is currently threatening their flight attendants with a staggering $27,000 pay cut by seeking to terminate their enterprise agreement. We also learned last week that a record number of Australians, 867,000, are now forced to work more than one job just to make ends meet. If you are one of these people, bargaining for a pay increase is difficult when your boss and cuts can so easily cut your hours or conditions. It's even harder if you're a woman. You're more likely to be in insecure work. You'll be paid $483.30 a week on average, less than a man, and you will receive little support to deal with your unequal share of caring responsibilities. We have some of the highest childcare costs in the developed world, and the second worst paid parental leave scheme in the OECD. We won't solve our wage crisis in this country without solving our insecure work crisis. And the only thing Scott Morrison has done is to make it worse. Last year, his government passed laws making it far easier for an employer to call someone a casual, regardless of their actual working relationship. So apart from his own and the Prime Minister's, whose job will be front of mind for Josh Frydenberg as he does the numbers for his third budget? There'll be two key things we'll be watching for on budget night. Firstly, who will this budget deliver for? Frances is a 54-year-old part-time worker in an aged care centre in Brisbane. She loves her job, but she only makes $21.90 an hour and lives week to week. She's often scared about how she'll pay her bills, earning only about $550 a week. She can't even afford to buy a new work uniform that she needs. Her pay has only gone up 80 cents an hour since she first started working at the centre almost 5 years ago, while the cost of living has significantly increased. She's only been able to save about $80,000 in super, so is terrified about retirement. Her aged care centre is understaffed in every area, often leaving her to do work with aged care residents, like dressing them, helping them to be mobile around the centre, that she's not qualified and certainly not paid for. Many of her colleagues, nearly all women, have left the centre because of burnout and insecure hours and wages. Frances wishes she could be full-time, but her employer continues to cut costs and use labour hire or just not roster on enough staff. She's never taken the two breaks she's entitled to on a shift because there just aren't enough staff. What will Frydenberg's budget deliver for Frances? Or is she just one of the Liberal Party leaners? Secondly, we must be all on alert for the budget fudges. If the Morrison government lives up to expectations, this budget won't be about backing workers like Frances, but will be aimed at buying votes and cauterising their wounds before an election. Here's our top five budget fudges that we'll be looking out for. First, they'll announce the Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, a small amount of funding for an area they've already made big cuts to. For example, the Morrison government has presided over an aged care sector urgently needing an extra $10 billion a year, according to the Royal Commission. Yet last year, Frydenberg announced a fraction of that. Even then, an aged care worker like Frances got none of it. Given the crisis in the sector is deeper than ever, expect another piecemeal announcement. Second, there'll be the re-gifting, trying to get more headlines off the same announcement. How many times do the same road projects get announced again and again? Tony Abbott announced federal funding for Adelaide's North-South Corridor way back in 2013. And last month, Morrison announced, yep, funding for Adelaide's North-South Corridor. Third, they'll announce the smoke and mirrors, things that just won't happen. Remember the Emergency Relief Fund, $4.7 billion announced 2 years ago and almost none of it spent. Are the floodwaters not high enough yet? Fourth, the barrels of pork that Morrison government has made an art form of. Get ready for more funds that let them splash cash on marginal seats. Remember sports rorts or the car parks that haven't ever been built. Fifth, the too little, too late. Token announcements to cauterise issues that risk costing them seats. Take our energy transition. They've spent most of the last 9 years blocking progress, denying the effect of climate change, fighting amongst themselves, or taking credit for the heavy lifting done by states and industry. Their low emissions technology roadmap last year was so small, misdirected and overview, that it's a roadmap towards staying in last place in the global race to become a clean energy superpower. Enough of their tricks though. What do workers want to see on the 29th of March? Fundamentally, it's measures that support working people to realise their potential. That is what sustainable economic growth depends on and should be all about. Let me take you through five of them briefly. First up, we need an end to the crisis of insecure work and cost of living. Changes to the laws to stop the many ways that employers turn secure jobs into insecure ones. A federal government prepared to argue that our national minimum wage should be a living wage and lifting pay caps in the public sector. Secondly, investing in the care economy, provide free universal early childhood education and care and deliver fair and equal pay for those workers, nearly all women, nearly all underpaid and overworked, who educate our youngest and care for our elderly. Universal good quality childcare takes tremendous pressure off women shouldering most of the care burden. This measure alone is a tremendous boost to national productivity, an estimated $11 billion per year, because it allows those women to do more paid work if they choose. It also gives our youngest the very best possible start in life. Thirdly, invest now in good jobs to future-proof our country. Last year, we worked with the Business Council of Australia, ACF and WWF on a plan to make Australia a clean energy export superpower. With enough ambition and collaboration, we could create nearly 400,000 good jobs and $89 billion in value by 2040. We can also lower energy prices and make a safer climate. Nearly everyone is ready to play their part in delivering this if we have a federal government that will listen and act. Fourthly, rebuilding our TAFE and skills system. Reverse the Morrison government legacy of severe funding cuts and neglect of TAFE and our vocational education and training system. And finally, and I can't believe we still have to say this, but we need all 55 of the Respect at Work recommendations implemented and 10 days paid family and domestic violence leave for all. But we will keep saying this and keep fighting for this until all women get the safety, respect and equity they deserve. I hope all of this has armed you for budget night in 2 weeks' time. Will it be another budget of buying votes or backing workers? I'm guessing we'll see a tired, out-of-touch government again try to reinvent itself with some big promises. But the changes that are desperately needed for a better, fairer economy and society, don't hold your breath. The good news is that the Australian public will get to have a say on what they believe and what they think is important less than 6 weeks after that. Thanks very much.